Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Max, and you're listening to Max Musing. We're going to give this another try here, and I'm going to dial the phone number of my guest, and my guest tonight is Prince Bagdasarian, and hopefully things will go a little more smoothly this time. Here. Talking to him in a few minutes.
This is Prince.
Hello, Prince. Can you hear me okay?
I could hear you well. How are you doing, Cheryl?
Okay. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. Are we good? Are we live?
Yes, we are. Because if we can hear each other, then we're live. Just wanted to warn you, though, Blog Talk Radio has a habit of having really bad sound. So there may be lags and there may be overlap, but usually everything works out okay. So, but fair
okay,
warning.
Okay, sounds good. No, cool. Sounds good.
Okay. So I know that you grew up in and around Hollywood, and I also know that before you started filmmaking, that you were an illusionist / magician, and you started that at like when you were 10 years old, and then by the time you were 12, you were on TV doing big stage illusions. Why don't you talk about that for a while?
Wow, you did some digging there.
Well, yes, I did.
No, that's true. I had a childhood career as a magician. It's fortunate and unfortunate because it was kind of a double-edged sword because, I turned to magic when as a hobby at first, and then it became a career after my dad took notice and he said, you know, why don't we take it to the next level and start the bigger stage illusions and get you booked at, you know, big Excalibur Hotel in Vegas and Magic Castle and all sorts of big places, you know, and see where it goes. And I did get booked. I did audition and I got on stage and I started doing a lot of magic, and a lot of that magic was among a bunch of adults, you know, in an adult industry. And so I kind of, you know, it was great. It was very overwhelming as a kid at 8, I think it was. And then I think around 14, I started quitting. I started looking at a lot of the stuff as far as like what my dad was doing, where he was filming a lot of the things, and mm-hmm. it was taking up a lot of my childhood life, you know, personal life. So I didn't really have a childhood between 8 and 13, 14 as other kids do, you know. And so a lot of the time I spent practicing magic or performing magic, or you know, a lot of my time was spent on that career. And I started I guess admiring what my dad was doing as far as behind the camera, and I started calling shots. I guess one could say where, you know, I didn't like the shots. I said, let's redo it this way or something like that. And then eventually, without him knowing, I started taking his gear and started making small films, which led to me eventually getting more interested in being behind the camera as opposed to, you know, in front and on stage even, you know, as far as live. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of that, when did you get the inkling that you wanted to be in the filmmaking business? Was it before you were a magician?
No, it was actually, it wasn't before at all. I did love films, you know, I admired a lot of filmmakers. I had my favorites. I had a lot of filmmakers I hated. I studied a lot of film around like my early teens, but it was mostly around 13, 14 is when I really – I know a lot of filmmakers go out and say, hey, I picked up my dad's camera at 5 and I was making movies, and that wasn't me. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know if my – 6-year-old daughter has any interest in making movies right now, but she does pick up my camera, you know, and it is what it is. But I think my main interest was when my dad was actually filming this stuff and editing it, and he was doing actually linear editing from like VHS tapes to VHS tapes, you know, and it was very it was a good insight of seeing it for hands on, you know, from my experience. And then eventually taking his gear, whatever lack thereof, you know, what it worked wonders at the time, you know. Who cares if it was VHS or mini DV or whatever. And then eventually I started building a more of an interest then around 13, 14.
And so your dad, did he like help you with that, or at least give you a little encouragement?
It's funny you asked that. Hopefully my dad's not on listening to this. But no, he actually was against the whole idea. He was telling me to drop that whole idea, get it out of my head. Also because he was very sour from the industry, from the entertainment industry in general, side of the business, on the magic side of the, where he got turned down a lot as well, you know. So I guess. I guess being turned down and rejection is really brutal when you're at his point, you know, from a manager's point of view, where he was managing my career more, you know, my sister and I. And so he didn't want me to get in there. He didn't want me to get into that business. He didn't want me to have anything to do with the business. He wanted, you know, I guess he wanted me I don't even know what he wanted me to do. But he just didn't want me to do that, and so I went against it. And eventually, I worked the day job, and I collected enough money to basically buy myself a tuition at film school. And eventually, when I got into film school, I realized that they're using old equipment, you know, and they weren't providing us the proper equipment to, you know, it was around when I got into film school. It was around the time where film was converting into digital, you know, like our industry was turning digital. So I learned both, basically. So I dealt with a lot of the original camera negatives. I dealt with the 16 millimeter, the 35s, and all that stuff. And then at the simultaneously, that transition was happening into digital, where it wasn't very good at the time, but nevertheless, it was going to the direction where we are now, you know. So I eventually bought one of the first good quality digital cameras. I invested like $5,000-$6,000 into it, and my mom was totally against it as well at first. And then I convinced her. She said, "You know what? If you want to do, go ahead and do it." I did do it, and so I bought that camera. And in buying that camera, that enabled me to actually shoot my first short film called Wave Parameters back in 2001, I believe it was. And then in the following year, I got into a film festival in Huntington Beach, won the best short film, among the most crappiest films I've ever seen in my life at that festival. but you know, it gives you a little bit of a confidence boost, you know, and then throws me right on track, saying that, hey, people actually appreciate the work that I put together and the time I put together and making this thing happen and bringing it to fruition, you know. I also finished film school, and then production, I want to say maybe like, I don't know, 8 years or so, learned that side of the business, and started producing films at my production company.
Yeah, that production company, is it PIB, or do you say it as a word, PIB?
Production. Yeah, it's PIB production. It's funny because so many times I've decided to change that name. And it's just bounced back always. People have told me, "Oh, keep it. PIB Productions actually stands for Professional Independent Business. Mm-hmm. So the PIB there is for that. But at the same time, it also stands for my initials for Prince Ishan Bagdasarian, which is my first name, middle name, and last name initials.
Yeah. Very cool. You started that in what, 2001?
I started 2001, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And now I have this down to talk about it. You like talked about it a little bit, that Wave Parameters. Now that was a short, and you were the editor, you were an actor, producer, writer, and director. Now, one of the questions that I wanted to ask has nothing to do with that particular film. I noticed that on IMDb you only have 3 acting credits. Is that by choice? Do you not like acting?
No, you know what? Those are all cameos. I don't know which credits are on there. Definitely, see, it sounds like Bory Parameters are on there for acting, but those would have been probably a mistake added by either one of my producers or somebody who put together the IMDb page at the time, because even though I am in the film, I do a cameo appearance, I don't like to be credited for one, you know. But a little bit of a trivia, I'm actually in all of my films. So I do have a cameo in all of my films, including the one you've seen. I don't know if you've seen Abducted yet on Showtime yet, but Infraction is one of your favorites, right? I actually have a cameo in that as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing you. I've got my own copy. So, yeah, I remember that movie very well. And for any of the listeners, Abstraction, we'll get to that in a little bit in more detail, but it's a very, very good movie. So getting back to that Wave movie. So what was that about? Just a short synopsis.
I like how you call it the Wave movie. That was the worst title I picked for that. It was the most challenging title for anybody to figure out what that movie was about. I should have just called it the Unforeseen Radio or something like that. It's about a radio that forecasts like tomorrow's death and sins a day before. That's pretty much what it was about. And it's a 30-minute short. With a bunch of up and coming film students and stuff like that. So technically it was my thesis film, but it wasn't. I just decided to do that once I got all my production company gear in order. I look back at it as a learning experience. You know, it's a starter project, but it's terrible. I'm sorry. It's just terrible.
I haven't seen it, so I couldn't say, but. Usually those things aren't as bad as what the people think that it is. But
if I find a link somewhere to it, I'll definitely send it. I'll send it forward to your way, a private link somewhere. I'm sure it's digitized somewhere. I don't know, somewhere, someplace.
Yeah, and I'm always honest. I mean, I'm not brutal. I'm not going to say, "Ew, this stinks." But if I don't like it, I'm not going to say that I like it if I don't. You know, other than that, I look for the good things. Even if I don't like something, when I do my reviews, I look for whatever is good about it, like say if it has good cinematography, acting, or what have you. So getting back to you, you did something around the same time, the Jazz Spell with Eric J. It was a TV series, and you were assistant director and editor on that. What was that show about? Because I really haven't heard of it.
Hey, Cheryl, before I get into that, let me ask you real quick. Is there an updated link for this podcast? Because, like, I'm literally getting bombarded with, like, messages and texts about, like, the link not working.
It's on your I already shared it. It's on there, and I did tag you. Because Blog Talk Radio – the way they've been working lately is I can't do a show that I already have a link to. And so when I go to go online, I have to start a whole new link as if I'm just going live right then and there on the air without a link. Because otherwise it's a mess if I try to do it the other way. I learned the hard way. So just let them know that it should be on your page because I did tag you.
Got it. So it looks like there's just a dash one at the end of the link. Got it. I just shared that again with everybody. So it sounds good.
Okay.
I just texted a bunch of people on the group text, so not to waste time on that. So going back to your question, the Jazzle with Eric J. was around, I think, 2003. It's funny because I had made Wave Parameters and I had made another film called The Valentiners or something like that. I don't remember what it was. And this guy had his name is Eric J. And he was starting up a reality show, Red Carpet, or like that, black entertainment, basically, a little bit of gospel. So it's like BET mixed with a little bit of gospel and stuff like that. So he was starting up his own show. And he was going to be doing reality red carpet arrivals, like, at every single black event, right? So he found my information from the festival directors at Huntington Beach, and then eventually he found my business card from somewhere. I have no idea from where. And he contacted me, and then we met up. We talked about it, and he's like, "I admire your work in this net. I want you to help me make this TV show come to fruition." And he was a one-man band, you know, and he was like literally doing everything himself. And you know, when you have no money, when you have no budget, when you have no sponsorship from the TV networks, big TV networks, then you got to do what you got to do. And I admire that. So it was also a learning experience for me, because I've never been around celebrity talent up until that point, you know. So he brought me on, and we started shooting nonstop, all sorts of like events, BET Awards, Essence Awards, ESPY Awards, everything, you know, everything from sports to reality to music to everything, you know. And so So in doing so, I ended up, you know, shooting a lot of red carpet arrivals with, like, let's say Beyonce, Magic Johnson, all these mm-hmm. celebs, and a lot of this one-on-one and face-to-face. And I started feeling a little bit comfortable being around these people that were so-called, you know, celebrities, you know, and it's just kind of like, they're just normal people, you know. And so it kind of it almost geared me up to eventually direct the film and not feel uncomfortable directing a certain kind of talent. You know what I mean? That's kind of where that was. And then Eric did a really good job with the show. He ended up doing a lot of it himself still. He paid me, it was kind of like a part-time job for me to do that and finish film school and, you know, basically write my scripts and do more films and just kind of keep going. But it was cool because, you know, I could grab my gear that I had just invested in, and then eventually basically pay off my gear by doing this job for him, for this guy who eventually ended up, you know, signing a deal with the network, doing maybe, I don't know, hundreds of episodes of this show, editing it himself. And then, you know, I helped him with certain things and here and there. And he actually has won some kind of awards and stuff, Emmys and all sorts of stuff for in San Diego, because he had a TV radio show in San Diego back in the day. So he had a lot of following from that. So he was just kind of piggybacking, making this thing a visual thing, you know, for TV. Mm-hmm. And I think up to this day, Eric J is still doing stuff similar to that. Still, you know, doing celebrity interviews, live events, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And I like his admiration. He's really pushing, you know, even at his age.
Now, one thing that on IMDb, we're not going to go through all of them because there's way too many, but I saw that you have 62 credits and all in the editorial department. Now, if you want to just go over a little bit, like what you may have done, or if you want to pick a specific film to talk about that you were working in the editorial department, that's fine. So we'll just cover that part, though, about those 62 credits.
Okay, so just to give you a background on where those credits came from, I think it should be more than 62 on as far as like editorial. I think some of it's under miscellaneous, even though all of that should be under editorial.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was TV show, and after doing a bunch of short films, I got a post production house in the valley from North Hollywood, around the Burbank area. In LA, and that company ended up having a deal with a post production house that's been around for like, you know, five decades or so, right? And this post production house was very old school. They didn't have up to date equipment. They didn't do the proper they didn't have the proper workflow for doing the up and coming things that needed to be done for digital, and then digital meaning a lot of the cinemas were changing to DCP. A lot of the workflow was going through color grading and digital intermediate, they called it. So when you color grade the film after post-production, after the editor is done, you color grade it. You basically start from scratch. You form the project, you color grade it, and you export it. It's a long process, especially for films that are shot on film, actual film, right? So I joined this post-production company, and I worked, I ended up, you know, I wanted to work there for a few years, maybe see what I could, you know, gather as far as experience goes simultaneously in starting up my production company and keeping it going, you know, and all that stuff. What ended up happening was I ended up staying there for about, I don't know, 7-8 years and becoming one of their main supervisors as far as post-production workflow goes. In doing so, I gained so much experience that here's the thing. So a lot of these filmmakers that come out and make these films and they grab a camera and they go out and do, you know, they write a cool script and they go out and do this stuff. Great. It's cool. But they have to just put the camera down and step back and look at the entire picture. Number one being, you know, the whole workflow as far as, are you going to be able to tackle this thing from A to Z? And then, and when I say A to Z, it includes the distribution process of the business side of the project, right?
Right.
So it's like, it's not like, yay, let's just make a film. And then what? What are you going to do with the film? If you don't get it to where it needs to go, then there's no point in me making that film, really. Because, you know, you can keep doing that all day long. You know, we could all get together and do this all day long, but it's a hobby, right? So that's the difference between the hobby and the job. So I learned from doing post-production for 8 years just the workflow of what it takes to make a movie from A to Z. And then simultaneously, I learned how to apply that to my production company if and when I do decide to tackle something on my own, you know, away from a company or a job or something, you know, on my own freelance, going out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a great experience doing that. And then eventually what happened was the company got bought out by a bigger company, which is usually how it works, Deluxe Digital Studios. And then I eventually, it's funny that that happened because about a year prior to that buyout, I ended up transitioning to Deluxe. Somehow, I have no idea how it was a coincidence that eventually Deluxe ended up buying this company called Hollywood Intermediate. But through Hollywood Intermediate, I love the owners. They taught me so much. I collaborated with so much. And as far as going back to your question, as far as what memories I have from that, from what specific film I remember was a lot of this. I remember two specific films. Number one was Rambo. I will never forget it. Because we, you know, I dealt with Sylvester Stallone, an idol of mine, for such a long time, you know, so many years, and sitting next to Sylvester Stallone, you know, and seeing him comment about things about his movie, and certain things he likes, certain things he doesn't like, things he wants to tweak, it was, you know, I had a bit of a moment of a starstruck moment. It was just kind of getting that, you know, even though I've been around celebrities and stuff like that, but you know, this is Sly, you know, you can't beat this, you know? So I admired the fact that he was very on top of everything and he basically was trying to get the movie to the point where it needs to be. And he would pull all stops out and just make it happen. And this company made it happen for him, and I was there through the whole process from, you know, beginning to end. And I saw the pros and the cons of making a film like this, you know, happen. Visual effects, conforming, editorial, color correction, sound design, all that stuff. You know, we even had a sister company that did the sound design down in, you know, LA, and going to that facility and seeing him to interact with the people there, and then the trailer when it got released, how excited he was when the trailer was. He was like, "This is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I want you guys to release this tomorrow, ASAP in the morning." You know, all this stuff. So, and this was for Rambo, the Rambo reboot. I think it was, I don't remember what number it is. There's so many Rambos now, but
yeah.
So that one was the one I got credited on, was the one that I worked on with him. Around that time, we also worked on this movie called Mad Money with Diane Keaton. And I remember Diane coming in and, you know, talking a lot about, you know, removing, you know, certain things on her intern shots about herself, you know, visual effect wise. And it was cool. It was exciting because, you know, again, these are A-list talent, coming in. And
right.
I've never heard from or seen, or I wanted to see how that interaction is between, you know, between us and also their comment about their own film and about what they've created, you know. So great learning experience. And so, I stuck around for several years, almost a decade there, you know, and eventually, decided to do my own thing.
Oh, good. Well, you did get a lot of experience, and that's always good.
Totally.
Okay, moving forward now back to Abstraction. Now, that was your first feature film. You were the director, you wrote the story, you were the editor, producer, and the second unit director of photography. Now, that's kind of common in indie films for one person to do a bunch of different jobs. So for the listeners, because I have my own copy, I already know what it's about. Give a synopsis and then talk about what it was like working on that.
Sure. So Abstraction is a 2015 film about two friends who basically pull off, heist, petty heist. And they decide to take a break after one heist goes wrong. And one of the guys meets a girl and falls in love with her. And then one day this girl concocts an idea for a heist of $500,000 painting that would change their lives. So they weigh their options and they decide to make this heist happen and then go forward with it. And eventually this will ultimately determine their fate, you know, from beginning to end. And so, yeah, it includes, Ken Davitian from Borat, that guy from Borat. Everybody knows him as Academy Award winning film he was in called The Artist as well the following year, I think. Get Smart and all that stuff. There's Eric Roberts in it, and Academy Award nominee. Karina Rico's in it, Hunter Eyes, Richard Manriquez, and James Lewis. A bunch of guys. A bunch of guys that I built a relationship with and also collaborate with up until now.
So what was it like? When you wrote the story, did you have certain people in mind? Because I know that some writers do. They have certain actors in mind when they write the story. Did you, or you just like wrote it and you weren't thinking about who's going to play what?
You know, So if you want a little background on Abstraction, Abstraction actually started as a short film concept that I wrote. Two guys robbing a couple places and eventually trying to tackle on a bigger heist, an overwhelming heist. And I'm a big fan of Michael Mann and a lot of his films, you know, like Heat and Thief back in the day. My dad used to love these movies. I used to steal his VHS copies. Even though I wasn't supposed to. I grew to like, you know, filmmakers such as that. Very gritty, very LA, So when I wrote this film, I wanted my first film to be a heist film. Feature film to be a heist film. But it's funny because I had written while I was in film school, I had written a short film called Desperate Decisions back in 2000 or something like that, before Wave Parameters was made, my first short film, mm-hmm. right? And I decided to ditch that because I wasn't able to fully complete that project. I just said, you know what, I think I'm just going to toss whatever footage I did shoot of this film and just never do anything with it. And so it kind of dwelled on me. It just kind of over the years, 2000 to 2012, that's like 12 years. I just sat there and just thought about this, you know. I didn't think about this life. You know, like that, but like it's always in the back of my head. Like I'm gonna make a feature, and I'm gonna make it a heist film. Is my first feature is gonna be a heist film, no matter what. So, I wrote this concept. I pitched it to Richard Manriquez, one of my buddies who is an actor, and he said, you know what? Why don't we expand on this a little bit more? And I said, let's do it. Let's sit down, expand on it. Let's elaborate and make it happen. Make it into a feature film and see where we could go with it as far as the storyline goes. So we expanded and we hashed it out maybe for several months, and eventually it came out with a full. I went out and then wrote a screenplay, came out with a 100-plus page screenplay, and ended up being the attraction that you see on screen now, released worldwide. But yeah, no. As far as actors goes, I never had anybody in mind. I didn't even think it was going to be possible for me to make this movie. But one of the first things I did was I reached out to a couple people that I knew. I was working in the industry, obviously, at that time, and I had a lot of favors that I did for people, and I could call in those favors, you know? And so I said, you know what, when else am I going to be able to call in these favors if not now, you know? So I called in these favors, including production designer who I just known from another friend's film. And hold on one quick second, Cheryl. I just spilled my wine. Right next to my editorial keyboard. That's not good. That's what happens when I use physical gestures when I talk. Yeah. Hang on one quick second.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll just talk for a few seconds so that there's not dead air. So, of course, as you guys know, we're he's also known as, before he starts talking again, he's also known as Badass Arian. Okay, you call me.
Badass Arian. I know somebody, I don't know who it was that brought it up first online and social media. But yeah, I thought that was funny. They were like, you should change your last name to Badass Arian instead. Because I constantly keep using Badass. I don't know why I keep doing that. But it stuck, you know. Everyone keeps saying, hey, badass post, badass picture. And anyway. Going back to Abstraction. So basically we put together, I called in these favors, put together the whole thing. And I had a tentative team I put together. I started kind of casting with LA locals and just doing auditions and things like that, but I just wasn't feeling it, right? So I said, you know what, let me just think on it, let me sleep on it. Eventually I saw this movie In Time with Justin Timberlake. I saw this girl in it named Karina Rico, and I said, you know, let's reach out to her manager and see what happens, even though we don't have much money and all sorts of stuff, you know? And we did, and she loved it. She came in, she was super, she like had 7-8 pages of notes about this character, you know, of that I wrote, which was, I was blown away by, you know? And eventually I got her on board, and then Ken, I called Ken's manager, and then eventually we met Ken, and he talked about, you know, he wanted to beef up the character a little bit. So we did. So we basically beefed it up for him and made it a little more elaborate, and he loved it. He said, I'm on board. Let's do it, you know. And Ken's Armenian, you know, and so am I. So I used that card on that end to play that, you know, and it's like the only card I had left at that point. And he was in a big movie at the time, and he was doing really well, you know. So it was kind of a good deed he did for me, you know, at the rate he did. But nevertheless, he still got paid. You know what I mean? It wasn't like these people were working for free. So it came together somehow, some way. Did auditions for all the character. Hunter Ives came on board. I cast him as the lead. He became one of my best friends now. We collaborated on another movie that was that we could talk about in a little bit, which is called Uncontrolled. And it's just been kind of like a, you know, a flourishing kind of a thing, you know, over the years. But there's, you know, it could be better, it could be worse, but I'm happy where we're at right now, you know, with a lot of the things that happened throughout the years.
Well, that particular movie did come out really, really well. I mean, anybody that likes a film that has action, especially because there were car chases and cars turning over. And so if you like action movies, whoever's listening, you'll love Abstraction.
That is true. Okay. That is true. But I always say one thing is, Cheryl, a lot of people think my films, because they're marketed as action films, right? Like Michael Bay type action films. But really, at the end of the day, I've always like set stories first, you know, and then actions the second. And if the action doesn't
right.
serve the story well, it doesn't belong in there. No, there's no reason to flip a car over just for no reason, you know.
Like, oh, well, no,
right?
Of course not.
Yeah.
Because it's the same thing with if you have special effects in a movie. If that's all you have,
mm-hmm.
well, then you don't have a movie if you don't have a story. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Exactly, yeah. So, stories first, and a lot of these, you know, the action's definitely sprinkled on there, and I always consider them, I guess, crime dramas, you know? Crime dramas are a good word for the types of films I've been making so far.
Right, yeah, and this one was a good one, and all the acting was good. There was not one single bad actor in that film.
Thank you. You mean I was not bad at all? You didn't. You mean you liked my cameo in there? Terrible.
Maybe if you had a bigger part, you would have been bad. But I'm just saying that because.
Thanks.
I mean,
girl.
I don't know. Well, you didn't have a bigger part, so I couldn't say. But for what you
sure,
had, you were good. But unless you have something else to say about Abstraction, I wanted to move on, if that's okay.
No. That's pretty much the gist of it. Yeah, for Abstraction, no.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want to like stop and go off to something else if you had something else you want to say. So for shortly, I wanted to go over another film that you worked on, Fifth Passenger. Because there were lots of my friends that were involved in that film. You were the post-production supervisor, and again, you were second unit director of photography, and you were also a co-producer. So I know what it's about because, again, I have my own copy, but if you could let the listeners know what that movie is about, like a short synopsis, and then what part you had in putting the movie together.
Totally. So Fifth Passenger is about five crew members who are who their main spaceship blows up and they get on a space pod, an escape pod, and there's only room for four, but there's five of them on board, so their oxygen levels are dropping a lot faster and the survival rate is a lot less. And so they band together. There's differences between them. And there's ranks that are different between them as well. And so they're trapped on this this escape pod, nevertheless, and they need to survive if they want to live. So simultaneously throughout their journey, throughout their trip, trying to find their way back or get some help, they encounter another pod, and an alien creature basically escapes from that pod and comes onto their space escape pod, and now they have another dilemma in their hands of survival. So yeah, that's pretty much, and then there's, you know, a lot of twists and turns. The thing is with a lot of my films that I've made, whether I've directed them or produced them or what have you, I like films that have twists, right? And I like, because life is full of twists and turns. Really, there's no way it goes smoothly. Nothing ever goes smoothly, even though you want it. Even if it goes smoothly, there's always going to be that little bit of a twist somewhere at some point where it's going to give you a little bit of a detour, you know.
Right.
And so a lot of my films that I write have a lot of this twist. Like Abstraction has like two, three twists on top of each other. My film Abducted, which was originally called Beverly Eden, again, twists and turns and all sorts of stuff. My newest film I wrote, again, same thing with Fifth Passenger. So that's what I admired about it when Scott Baker brought it to me, brought me the idea. Scott Baker is one of my friends who we became friends on Abstraction because he did Steadicam operating for me on that film. And around that time, he was just starting out. And so, again, it's one of my friends who I called. I said, hey, you know, I need a favor. You know, I need to get these cool shots, and I need a Steadicam operator. And I know you're starting out. I know you got the gear. Let's make it happen. And he was down for it. So in barter for that, I helped him shoot the pitch trailer for Fifth Passenger, which basically after I read this, you know, the idea, the concept and all this stuff, we got together, Manu and Traimi from Star Trek Voyager, you know, played in Geb. He was in one of my friend's pitch things that we were shooting at the time where I brought Scott on to. And Scott, he started speaking, and all of a sudden, we were like, whoa, this guy's from Star Trek. Oh, my God. And I was like, I have no idea. I don't watch Star Trek. I'm a more Star Wars guy, right? So I had no idea who Manu was. So, you know, Manu and I clicked well. Scott and I and Manu clicked well. So all three of us basically banded together to make this trailer to put on Kickstarter to raise funds to make this movie called Fifth Passenger happen. In 2000, when was that? 2015?
It was 17.
I think it was 2015. We were in production, so it was probably like 2014, maybe, or something like that. Yeah, around 2014, we made this pitch trailer. I ended up editing the pitch trailer myself with Scott. We did the visual effects ourselves with the help of this German company. And then we put it up, and you know, I'm pretty sure you recall from back then. You know, we ended up raising a lot of money on Kickstarter, ended up on the front page of StarTrek.com, and a lot of the fans started reacting really well to this thing, and Manu was super stoked, and he went out and tried to get some other investors to get on board. I tried from my side, Scott tried from his side, Morgan from her side, all this stuff, you know, and so. It was cool. It was a cool experience. I produced it hands-on from that point. You know, also, I decided to, you know, obviously that I wasn't going to be able to DP this thing, and Scott was directing it. So I decided to help in the background as much as I can, as much as I can during production, you know. And so I did. You know, we shot a bunch of days. I had to leave for a bit to Sundance during the shoot, I remember, in 2015. And then eventually, I edited the first cut of Fifth Passenger, which never ended up coming to fruition, because it was the first cut that was done with no visual effects, with nothing. A lot of the stuff was missing, green screen shots, all sorts of things and whatnot. Manu and I ended up sitting in the editorial, and, like, you know, Scott and I, and we ended up, like, hashing out a lot of the ideas and stuff like that, and we started piecing things together, and eventually I got hired on to do my next movie, Abducted, which was called Ever Eden. And so I couldn't really proceed with the amount of things that needed to be done on Fifth Passenger. So therefore, I just gave the film back to Scott, and I said, we need to go. Obviously, they need to, you know, it's their baby, Morgan and Scott's baby, then they need to get a new editor on it. And so it's so forth and so on. They ended up getting, I think it was Deadpool or something like that. Some assistant director or I'm the assistant editor from another one of those projects to come on board and edit the film. So yeah, I think it ended up good. I think it ended up good for what it is, for what the budget was, for what we made it happen. You know, visual effects took a while. Unfortunately, it took 5 years or so to get the movie out with the buyer and get it out there, but ended up on Redbox. You know, they ordered like 40,000 copies, and you know, it was on Amazon Prime and Hulu and all that stuff. You know what I mean? So it was cool. It was a good outcome, I think.
Yeah, and it was a good movie. I played it at family night, and it was really good. It's got a little bit of everything in it: comedy, drama, sci-fi, explosions, and a really good story.
Yeah, so totally. And when you're a Star Trek fan, you know, you like seeing those actors still acting. So I'd be.
Well, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The only reason why I'm, like, not rushing, but I wanted to segue into the next one, is because we're down to, like, 15 minutes. And I wanted to make sure you have time to talk about Abducted, because that's a more recent film, and you were the director, writer, and editor on that. So I want you to talk about that, like the story and you know, the process and everything of that.
Yeah, for sure. So Abducted, which was originally called Diverted Eden, came to me from a producer friend named Shirley. They have a company called Imagining Pictures, Shirley and Daniel. And so it was going to be a vehicle for Daniel Joseph to star in. and Daniel Joseph, the lead actor in Abducted. And so they approached me about this, and we talked about it, hashed out some ideas. And I had this concept of a kidnapping thing. I implemented it into the story idea they had, and eventually it became Diverted Eden, a.k.a. Abducted, right? So that was around 2016 or so when I started production, 2017-ish, when we shot that movie. And it was probably one of the biggest films I've done thus far. I can't disclose the budget, but when you look at it, you know it's big. And it was so many trials and tribulations on this film, but at the same time, it was very exciting for me because I get to utilize an entire crew and actually feel the difference between making an indie film and making a semi mini major studio film, where I have every single hat covered, like every single person has their job, each department has multiple heads, and you know, all those kinds of things, you know, where all I get to do is answer questions, and I don't have to get to do these things, you know, I don't have a hand in everything, you know, and a lot of these creatives come together to make this thing happen. It's so amazing that this, you know, this thing came out the way it is. And you know, at the end of the day, it's still like one of those things where we shot 15-20 days, but then I went out with a small team, with my own production company gear and team, and I went out and just shot like maybe 15-20 days of pickups, you know, just miscellaneous things that couldn't be achieved in the main production days, hence keeping the budget very low and minimal, almost a third of the cost of what a movie like this should cost, you know. And so we made it happen. Wow. We had Scout Taylor Compton in the movie from the Halloween films. She's the lead actress from the Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween films. And we have Michael Urie from Ugly Betty TV show. He's one of the main actors on that back in the day. And Ken DeVitin was in it again. A bunch of cool little actors, character actors and things like that, you know. And so, and I think Daniel did a good job in leading the whole thing. Trinity, the little girl, she did amazing on it as well. And that was her first film. So I ended up editing the film as well. Second unit DP'd all the B-unit stuff, you know, as far as getting the pickups. And then we put it together. We went to film festivals, won Best Action Short Film. I mean, Best Action Film at Hollywood, at a festival in Hollywood, Regal Entertainment Cinemas. We opened that, and then we went to Sedona and a couple other places, Toronto. And then we eventually, the producers got a deal with Showtime. And it's basically a Showtime exclusive film now. It's like being like run nonstop on Showtime, like aired on Showtime. I don't have Showtime, like regular Showtime channel, but every time I look at the website of the air dates and the air times, it's like it's constantly there. It's like every couple, like, you know, 4 or 5 hours, it's like playing on loop. That's really cool. It's exciting, but it's also on VOD through Showtime as well, through their app and stuff. So I checked it out through there, and I always tell people to check it out through there as well, because it's on demand whenever, you know, anybody has time. But yeah, it's cool. Unfortunately, they changed the title from Diverted Eden to Abducted, but it is what it is. It's marketing. It needed to be more simplified and straight, you know, straight to the point, and have people understand what the movie is about, you know. So Abducted, it is, you know. So it's out there, it's out in the wild, and I'm super, super happy about it, and I think it's one of the biggest achievements of my career so far.
Now, that's one I haven't seen, so I can't really say whether I like it or not, because I haven't seen it, but I'm sure I would, because I haven't seen you make a bad film yet, so there you go.
You have to see Abducted, Cheryl. You have to see it. There's car flips in it. There's car flips and car chases. You're on board. Look, this is how I went into that car crash, because there was a car crash written in it, and I told the producers and the team, I was like, you guys have all seen Abstraction, you saw the car crash, okay, well, I need to do it 5 times better than that. And everyone was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what we're on the same page. So that's what we created. That's what we wanted for that car crash sequence, especially, you know. But yeah, it's so much, so many locations. So it's it was so much work, you know, it was so much work, and a lot of people can't achieve, you know, it on the budget that I achieved it on, but it happened, and it was great. But, you know, of course, you have people who hate the movie as well, so, you know, it is what it is. There's always going to be people that don't like it, that can't please everybody, but we're not curing cancer, you know, at the end of the day, it's just entertainment.
Right. Well, the thing that I don't like about some reviewers, and this includes big game reviewers, because I personally know some of them, actually, that they don't even watch the movie. They just fast forward, and then that's why they don't even get what's going on, because they didn't even watch it.
I've watched it so many times.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention, because you had mentioned it, so I wanted, if you were done talking about Abducted.
Yeah, that's pretty much it for Abducted. I think if everyone gets the chance, if anybody's, you know, interested in films like that, and listeners on there, definitely check it out. It's out there. Extraction's available on Quibi. It's a new platform. It's exclusively on Quibi now. They took it off all the other platforms like Hulu and stuff, so it's on Quibi. And then Fifth Passenger, I think, is on Quibi and also on Amazon Prime still. So, yeah.
One thing that I did want to go over, because you had mentioned it, and we have like 8 minutes. So if you want to talk about that movie that you were talking about that you and Hunter Ives were getting together to do.
Sure thing. So that film is called Uncontrolled. Uncontrolled is I can't really disclose too much about the plot of what the film is about, but it's another heist film. It's an action thriller, and it's all set inside one location with a minimal cast in that location, but then all these things ensue all around them. There's lots of set pieces. There's so many things that are unraveling, so many like side elements and things like side stories and all sorts of stuff. Hunter and Ives and I collaborated on this because I brought it to him, pitched it to him. Richard was also one of the first idea collaborators with me on this, and then eventually Hunter and I ended up writing the script together, which became Uncontrolled. Then I took it to a friend of mine, a producer named Oscar Akopian. And, you know, he had just came off of collaborating with a couple other individuals to make this other movie in Armenia. And one of those individuals was the Academy Award winning writer of Green Book. And so he had a lot of, you know, a collaboration with a lot of these guys in the industry and whatnot. He wanted to make another film, and we were going to collaborate on something, and so I pitched it to him, and he loved it. And so I finished a new draft of the film, and we eventually took it to a production company. The owner of that production company loved it. He wanted it to himself, and we were going to basically make this movie. We had a couple names tentatively coming on board attached to star as the leads of the film. This was late last year, and around maybe January, February, we had the final budgets broken down. We were going to be signing up with Ohio to shoot in Ohio completely in Cleveland, because my DP, who lives there, he has a lot of access to so many things, and a lot of things we were trying to achieve in Los Angeles were not going to be possible. And so we were shooting Ohio and Cleveland and Cincinnati, and then all hell broke loose with COVID. And my entire film put on hold. Ohio was one of the main hit areas first.
I live here in Ohio. But
you live in Ohio?
One thing that will say, just quickly, because I don't want to take away from you, but our governor was one of the first governors, actually one of the first five in the entire nation, that started instituting the stay-at-home orders and the masks and everything. And what made it worse was when people wanted to go back to the restaurants and eat and everything, and a lot of people were taking off their masks, and that's what made it all worse. And so now it's actually a quote-unquote law that you have to wear a mask when you're out in public, or you can be fined and or put in jail. So, yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah. Same thing here on some cities in LA, but not all, of course. And there's tons of cities that don't give a damn. Unfortunately,
yeah.
I think we're living in a nightmare. For me, it's a nightmare because at first, not only money wise, it affected me, but also my career, more importantly, affected me.
Right.
And, you know, that's beyond even talking, that's like not even like talking about, you know, my family side of it, of like, you know, dealing with my kids. I have a newborn, 6-month-old. I have a 6-year-old who has to do Zoom classes, all sorts of things. And, you know, at the same time, it's trying to be a filmmaker and make your career happen, especially in a time like this. It's just crazy, you know, and it's like literally like I'm like now doing like these small miscellaneous projects like music videos and like commercials and all sorts of little things to keep afloat, you know, and keep creative. But at the same time, it's like, well, really, this August, I was supposed to be shooting in Ohio, Uncontrolled, you know, which would have been my biggest film thus far. And it would have been, you know, another stepping stone for me in the right direction. So now I'm just kind of lingering, you know, just like everybody else, I guess.
Yeah.
But, we'll see what happens. Well, I guess better safe than sorry, right? So we'll see how this year concludes.
Yeah, what other filmmakers have been doing, and I know not everybody can do it, but they've been having people like film their little things and then send it to him, and then he splices it into the movie, and then he does do some filming of people that in his area, but they make sure they're like 20 feet apart and everything. But it all came about because of COVID.
Totally. A lot of these remote filmmaking is happening now. I mean, I know this guy, Deion Taylor, he went out and did a movie in Lake Tahoe, and they did it from, you know, A to Z, and they made it happen. They got all the permits. They got tested every other day. They were being tested on set. The unions are being tough about it, you know, and I understand. I just, you know, for my film and the way it was, it's just hard to get a film financed in general, especially an indie film, and getting a talent, good talent, recognizable talent on board an indie film with very minimal budget. It's tough as it is, not to mention doing it in that scenario. It's not going to be possible, you know? So,
right.
So we're just kind of sitting this one out, see what happens. Maybe next year, Uncontrolled will come to production in your hometown, and then we can meet face to face, and you can come to set and all sorts of stuff. And now we'll have a much better conversation than what we're having now about Uncontrolled.
Well, I don't mean to like almost cut you off. It's not really cut almost. We've got like 2 minutes left, and usually at the last 2 minutes, I like to ask the guest to tell people what is the best way to get a hold of them.
Usually the doesn't really is. No.
Yeah, the sound is really messing up right now. I didn't catch any of that. Are you still there, Prince?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I don't know what it is about this Blog Talk Radio. They really need to fix it. So I just didn't, if you said how people could get a hold of you, I didn't hear any of that. But I don't
it's
need
on,
to hear
yeah, it. It's through my website, princebagdasarian.com, which is my name and last name. Or through PIBproductions.com, my production company, and then also on IMDb. There's a lot of contact info on there as well. But yeah, PrinceBagdasarian.com is the main way.
Good. You've got a little less than 60 seconds if there's anything that you want to say in closing.
I think we talked a lot about my career and stuff and where we're at, where I'm going. I appreciate the call, Cheryl. I appreciate the talk. Thank you for the interview. I hope everyone's staying safe. Whoever listened in on this, you know, just keep your head up. You know, we're gonna get through this, and we're just gonna take it one day at a time, I guess. You know.
Yeah, that's really all you can do. Well, and I appreciate you being on the show, Prince. And try to have a good night, and try to keep busy, whatever you need to do to keep busy, and take care of that little baby.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you. Keep in touch. We'll talk. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.